We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to kind of say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular. Okay.
Hello and you're very welcome to Your Politics podcast from RT News. I'm Paul Cunningham. Joining me in studio, we've got Micheál Lehan, RT's political correspondent. Micheál.
Hello.
You want to say anything at all other than just hello?
It's what a day.
What a day. And we're going to come to just what a day it's been.
I didn't listen to Michael Noonan. I never thought it would happen. He promised it wouldn't happen.
Yeah. Well, stranger things have happened. We've also got Sandra Hurley somewhere down the line. Sandra, can you hear us?
Yes. Hi, Paul.
Excellent. And we've got such an array of talent in RT. We've dispensed with the political guest and we brought in David Murphy, our political coverage editor.
I'm here, Paul. I'm really delighted to be here. I'm really looking forward to talking about corporation tax.
He's been trying to get in to this
the
studio
of my
now.
Day.
We had him locked up in a room, but unfortunately he's managed to get. Anyway, so we're going to start off with corporation tax, but I decided maybe there might be a better way of starting the programme if we can put music to corporation tax, because the jazzy start doesn't really sort of get it. So I've got a plan here, and I was just thinking, if and see if I can call this up now.
Think maybe about training grown moves that you should tell the others.
No, this is the whole point, is you don't tell them, and then they have to react. You know what I mean? Okay, so here
it's
we
more
go.
Brian Clough, isn't it?
I'm trying to think of corporation tax, and can you mix it with AC/DC to try and get people to sort of dig it? You ready? Corporation tax. Goes up to 15%. Should we have held out? Sanders says no, but Micheál says yes. back in Black Sea, we are heading back in the black because we're now part of the big gang, Nations of the World, David Murphy. We are signing up to 15% and we're delighted.
Well, you know, it's interesting. People thought that this was going to be bad news for Ireland when it was all this talk, and this has been going on for 10 years. It's the story of two Pascals, Pascal Santamin and Pascal Donoghue.
I like it. I think this is better now than that music. It's a bit gimmicky.
I thought everyone in Kerry liked AC/DC. It was like you couldn't be born with it. Come on.
No, but it's true. So Pascal Santamin, he is the man from the organization for economic cooperation and development. Okay. And so for 10 years, he has seen that there's been a big problem with multinationals who have been, you know, shifting around their profits to try to shop in the lowest tax location. And he's been trying to tidy all of this up. And, you know, the pressure has been coming on Ireland to increase its corporation tax rate. And ideally, the plan was that countries like Ireland would be going up to 21%. That was what was on the table. And this 10-year-long negotiation is now concluded today, and Ireland has signed up to 15%. So there's a big benefit in one respect to what's happened, and there's also a downside in one respect to what's happened. So
for when you say upside downside, for who are you talking about?
Well, for Ireland. So. Right. If we remained
Ireland Inc.
If we remained outside of the deal,
we could do what we wanted.
Well, apart from the kind of ethics and apart from the fact that, you know, it wouldn't look good, but if we remained outside the deal, there would have been a financial side to this, which was that the countries who were going to charge 15%, if we were imposing 12.5%, other countries would have got the extra 2.5%. In other words, so money which was generated here could have been taxed elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So we would have lost out in that respect. However, now that the 15% has been agreed, we will get all of that 15%. I guess the big thing about this deal is that down the road, it could take a long while to see what the full effect is, a bit like something like Brexit. It could take many years to see what the full effect is. I think it's unlikely we're going to see big corporations who are based here up sticks. But the question is, the future deals that are coming down the track, are they going to continue to come here? Will we be as attractive as we once were? There is another benefit to this, which is that nobody out of the 140 countries who are signing up to this, nobody can undercut us because they're all They've agreed to go with a minimum of 15%. So the type of scenario whereby people were competing to have the lowest tax rate, that has been taken off the table. And that is quite a big thing.
Sandra, one thing we have heard is that there is going to be a cost, according to the government, which is $2 billion a year in lost revenue.
Yes, Pascal Dunhuugh confirming that figure again. Now, interestingly, Jed Nash from Labour has been pushing for a lot more detail on this and how that figure was realised. And he's really suggesting that that figure is somewhat nebulous. It could be more than that. But I think the reality is it's impossible to quantify exactly because we don't know about future investment and how much investment we might lose that might decide to go elsewhere. I think the other interesting point today is about how the government is selling this decision, and the emphasis all week has really been about how Ireland, in the form of the finance minister, has been securing concessions. And it's all about sort of getting what Ireland was looking for in the negotiations. So I think the government has made the best of a bad situation. This was something that we were told for a long time would be a bad result for Ireland. And the government is certainly putting a gloss on it in terms of those concessions that it has secured.
Which was almost perfect, apart from the French again kind of intervening and telling the world that it was all a done deal anyway. On Wednesday, wasn't it? On Tuesday.
Yes.
Yeah.
A certain minister popped up on the wires.
Yeah.
But we had been sort of, there were signals, I did say here,
yeah, if that's right, Paul, I did say here this day last week when you asked me would they sign up to it, I said yeah.
I think Dave Murphy was saying in the previous month when we came back.
The direct question was going to happen this day. I mean, the people were saying this day last week.
Yes.
But there were two big things going to happen this week, the National Development Plan and this.
Well, we come to the NDP in a second, but just to pursue this, could Pascal Dunhuugh, and I'll ask you the same question, David, can Pascal Dunhuugh say, you know, everyone else, 130 nations had signed up, I held out, I said this needs to change and something as fundamental as at least 15% and now it's just 15% and that is a political victory in anyone's charts?
Yeah, I think so. And it's definitely
like a real one.
It seems to be, yeah, and that seemed to happen a few days ago, that those words were dropped, and then the 750 million threshold as well, and those negotiations with the commission that were ongoing for that kind of nod that things would stay at the 15% for the moment. They seem assured on all those points, you know.
Sometimes in negotiations, you know, you might put in something which you expect to lose. So on the basis, you can say, look, I've conceded this, that and the other. Is this a big victory for Pascal Dunhuugh, who also happens to be chair of the Eurogroup? This is a sign that he's flexed his international muscles. Or was this something, a game that the OECD were playing and they're always prepared to throw in the towel on at least anyway?
I think certainly his chairmanship of that group of European finance ministers has enabled him to get a really good idea of what perhaps ministers are saying in private, what their thinking is, what their policy is. It's also put him in quite a strong position in terms of negotiating, because he's going to be able to see all of the cards on all of the tables all of the time. He's also had very, very detailed conversations with the multinationals based here. So I think he's had a good sense of what they were willing to pay in terms of corporation tax. So he knew that when it was heading towards 15%, when the turnover figure in terms of which companies would be affected, when the deal turned out to be all companies with a turnover of more than 750 million euro, he knew how that would play out. So he had a very good handle in terms of the effect of all of this. And we can see, even before the deal was agreed, even before Ireland signed up to it, we had people like the American Chamber of Commerce here in Ireland saying, you know, Ireland should go ahead and sign up to this. And once those multinationals were behind it, I think it made life a lot more easy. But they would have only been behind it if they'd a sense of what way the direction of travel was.
Okay, moving on to the question of the National Development Plan, which was one of the other big ticket items this week. Micheál Lehane was giving out about Páirc Ó Caoimh in the last podcast, mm-hmm. and on Monday he got the chance to walk the pitch. What did you find?
You can't talk about that.
Can you not?
No. It's a bit wet, but that's all you can say.
Okay. Should we move on?
I think so.
Okay,
yeah,
rather quickly.
It's working very well. There's a lot of money went into it. It's a good pitch.
So, NDP, you were there.
Yeah.
And?
Well, I think to get everything into the one document and to get to all the parties to say that they were all winning and they were all achieving, like, was deft politically. But I suppose when it comes to actually priorities and what is going to happen, it's a little bit vague on that. And they're talking about things like the planning process and about competitive tension between projects. It keeps the document there. It shows that there is a big wad of new money in it, almost 50 billion, I suppose. That's the most significant thing. But what actually is going to happen and the order in which it's going to happen, that's a little bit less clear. So you do feel you will see more political tension rather than competitive tension in the future when it comes to the priority for certain big projects. That's inevitable.
David?
Well, actually, I thought my favourite analysis on this, although I did value your analysis, Micheál, was actually Sandra's. Sandra, you had a really interesting blog on the website where you described it as a political fudge, and you described how everybody politically got a bit of everything.
Yeah, that's true. I think it was fairly surprising, really, that when a government is supposed to make choices, when it came to roads, they decided to list nearly all the roads that could possibly potentially be built. However, the Greens came out beforehand and just said, well, they're probably not all going to be built. There's no guarantees. You know, they're going to compete with each other. And then Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil had to come out and all the individual backbenchers putting out press releases for their area and telling people that the roads definitely would happen. And I think if you step back a little bit from that, of course, it's a compromise that, you know, at the heart of coalition politics. And that's how both sides, they can come out and sell it to their various constituencies and their voters. But in some ways, you could see it as a win for the Greens. I think it really put the other two parties on the back foot. And I think a lot of backbenchers were fairly annoyed by it, because before the thing was even announced, the Greens were suggesting a lot of stuff wasn't going to happen. So there was always going to be that difficulty around roads and about the ratio of spending of public transport, twice the spend versus roads. And I think it made a bit of a joke, actually, of having a plan for capital spending, because they didn't seem to make a lot of decisions on exactly where the money would be spent.
Micheál, there was one road in East Cork which didn't make it into
the plan. All the roads and then one road.
One road.
James O'Connor's Road over around Castlemartyr, yeah.
It's already named after him, is it?
I'd say it is.
Okay. But just before we go to that, isn't it true to say that when it comes to these plans, because you've seen a few of them, is that basically you're not coming up with something new. You're basically coming up with something old and something new when you sort of wrap the two of them together.
Yeah, there's a lot of old in this one in particular. I suppose light rail for Limerick was one of the new items, all right. But there was a lot of old stuff there. But of course, that green mechanism or green measure of things, that was new, all right, as to how future projects would be assessed. But it did seem there was extra money. There's extra money there and there's a lot of ambition there. But what happens? In what order, we don't know.
David?
I think one of the interesting things is that, you know, people look at these announcements and they say, oh, there should be some big new things and they should go ahead, and when are they going to go ahead, and they should just go ahead and do them. But instead, like, if you think about it from the point of view of the economy and spending all this money on capital, actually what you want economically is a steady flow, a continuous flow of projects, one after another, year after year. Because what you don't want to do is have a huge lump of money going out there. You're going to soak up all of the available workers, all of the available resources. You're going to result in a big jump in prices. And then what happens when all those projects are finished? So you want a steady flow of projects. And I think it's right that it should be done in that way, that they should go back and look at what they've done, what is currently underway, and what they're going to do next. I think that's it should be actually dull and boring. But it shouldn't be bang, wallop, quiz, whatever.
But just to follow up on that, because one of the management issues cited by the Taoiseach Micheál Martin this week was the question of, on the one hand, you were going to have an expansion of the economy and a creation of jobs, and at the same time, it looked, in the short term at least, you're also going to have an expansion of inflation. So how do you manage that? Because as you were telling us last week, inflation is the one that gives the central bankers the heebie-jeebies.
Real serious heebie-jeebies. Yeah. Serious heebie-jeebies. I remember well when they made Mario Draghi, head of the European Central Bank, built the German newspaper, wrote an editorial saying, what did the Italians ever do for us apart from give us spaghetti and inflation? And in Germany, they have a real fear about the effect of inflation. And I think this is going to be a big, big issue in Ireland and in other countries. So what's going on at the moment is the discussion is that perhaps the burst of inflation we're having now is a short-term burst that's brought on by a big rise in energy prices. So if that is true, then that would be okay. However, if that is not true, then you're going to have a burst of inflation while you've got low interest rates and you've got a lot of money in the system because of quantitative easing. And therefore, you're going to have less ability to control it unless you're going to significantly increase interest rates. Normally, when central banks see inflation on the horizon, they take out the one tool in the toolbox they have, which is interest rates, and they increase them. So if it goes on and if it becomes more than a short-term thing, I think we could expect interest rates to go up. And the good old days of quantitative easing, of the printing presses rolling and money flowing around the place, that would come to an abrupt halt.
Speaking about control and controlling himself, how did the Fianna Fáil TD James O'Connor get on? Did he manage to control himself when his road was not in that big plan?
No, he was angry, very angry. Even though there is a line in the plan, page 65, that allows for projects that aren't in the plan to get into, to get built, to
this
get delivered.
Clause for local authorities.
If there are congestions and with particular reference
and stuff.
Bypasses. Yeah. If there's one road Eamon Ryan likes, he likes a bypass.
He wasn't committing to the Galway bypass when he was on Morning Ireland during the week.
But he likes bypasses. When he was on the Shaky Bridge in Cork, he was saying whatever about motorways, bypasses, they're good, you can live with them.
Yeah, because he also went up and he said that while people think when it comes to climate action and reducing emissions that, you know, agriculture is the big problem, the major problem is transport in particular.
The car embedded in the
embedded
sister.
Yeah. But anyway, back to James, what happened and what's going to happen?
I think James O'Connor gave the impression for the last 2 days that he was going to leave Fianna Fáil if he didn't get a bypass around Castlemart or Ankilla. It seems like they will reach some accommodation. He had got words, reassuring words from the Taoiseach and the Public Expenditure Minister on Monday anyway, but they weren't sufficient that this project could be looked at in isolation to the plan with a proposal. And apparently there is a proposal in place anyway. So he marched up the hill, I think, and hasn't.
But do the government not leave themselves hostages to fortune in the sense that every TD is going to come along now and say, if you don't give me this, I'm off. And the problem is that you need a majority of 80. Their numbers are coming down towards 81. Is that right?
He's only in the podcast.
It's 82 now, but if he was to leave, it would be 81. Yeah.
He's only in the podcast 2 minutes and now he's asking the questions. Did you notice that?
if they had lost James O'Connor though, and it had gone to 81, that would have been a bit quicker than expected that the bits were coming off the spaceship.
Well, they've a big block of independence, though.
Well, yeah, but like,
you can't rely on them in tough times.
You have to go and you have to make a play, and then if the perception of the government gets really bad, it gets more difficult with each vote.
If you roll back a year, it wasn't two Fianna Fáilers we expected to walk, it was two Green Party members.
That's in the Ready Reckoner, the great unsaid in government, as they're doing up numbers, they always looked to Patrick Costello and Nessa Horrigan as the people who would go first. But if you do have Mark McSharry gone, if James O'Connor went as well, then you'd be down two before the expected two. And then that would lead to 79, and 79 is the great symbolic number. You're below 80 in the 160 Parliament. Mm-hmm. And from there on, it's you're in bother. Yes, you have the numbers with the independents, but the government is beginning to limp badly if that were to happen.
What do you make of it, Sandra?
But of course, that hasn't happened, and the government is on in fairly solid footing. And indeed, the Taoiseach's mood this morning seemed particularly good. Maybe things are solid enough going to budget week.
Yeah, he seemed confident. But Sandra, how do you think the coalition is looking? It's been sort of a big week. They've had big announcements, but could they be in big trouble?
I think on James O'Connor, he has made a big play, and if he doesn't fully get what he wants, or if he seems to settle for a compromise, I think that's not necessarily good for him. How does the coalition look? I think they have held together, but it hasn't been a bad week, I think, overall. I mean, they love announcing things, so. But I believe the announcement in Cork was a little lackluster. I wasn't there. Micheál was there. It didn't have the kind of the pomp of some previous NDP announcements, but they got through it, and I think they have managed the corporate tax decision as well as they possibly could have. They've got the expectation right, and that's really managing the expectation was a really big part of this. And of course, they'd be an outlier. And interesting, the opposition are united in saying that, you know, they had to join the deal and they had to make this decision. So there's no major criticism in the Dáil for it.
Well, let's just, we've got about 5 minutes left on our podcast. Just want to throw things forward. It's an amazing thing in politics. You know, NDP, multi-billions. Here we were talking about corporation tax, billions over, because next week we've got something called a budget coming up as well. We've got all sorts of things.
Well, it's interesting because one of the things that's happened continuously in budgets, particularly when Fine Gael have been involved, is that they drop loads of hints. Like the next weekend, this weekend coming, we can expect loads of hints about, you know, fuel allowance, pensions, all of these things, yeah. You know. But then when you boil it all down, they do make announcements in these areas. But when you boil it all down, you're talking about billions. Like many people will find generally after budgets like this, that they're better off to the tune of about somewhere between €3 and a fiver. You know, the numbers won't be that big. And if you look at what's been going on in terms of the economy, we've borrowed an awful lot of money to keep the show on the road with COVID, like €34 billion or so. So our national debt is around €234 billion, one of the highest in the EU. And what tends to happen then, like while it's okay, while interest rates are really low, but what tends to happen is that in future years, when interest rates go up and you replace the bonds, which are at, for instance, 0%, which bonds at a higher interest rate, more and more of the money you collect every day by way of tax is eaten up in interest. So you just need to be wary of that. And I think Pascal Dunne, who it was interesting in the few interviews he's given about the budget, he's repeated the fact that we've got to keep an eye on the national debt. And that'll be the job for Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath. Michael McGrath to keep the spending limited and Pascal Donoghue to keep the tax giveaways limited. And I think in terms of the message they'll send out, they will talk up the fact they will be trying to help out the people who need it in society. But I would be surprised if ordinary people find a lot more money in their pockets, because energy prices are going up an awful lot. It's going to be very difficult for the government to really compensate the ordinary person for that.
It does look like it will be the fuel allowance. This idea of a standalone fund, emergency fund, doesn't seem to have gone anywhere in the budget negotiations in the last few days. So it will be an increase of the fuel allowance, probably the length it runs, maybe the eligibility as well. And then looking at things like what used to be called the family income supplement, now it's the working family support scheme, that you could see increases there as well. But I think as things stand at the moment, that there's a long list of things being looked at, but they seem to be the major ones where they can try and put money into to deal with the energy crisis.
Yeah, because we heard, wasn't the Russian President Vladimir Putin hinting that maybe he was going to release some of the gas, which might bring down the prices, which meant consumers were not going to be facing month-on-month increases as well. But Sandra, once again, the budget, a huge set piece in the political diary, but given that so much of this has already been trailed, do you expect many surprises yourself?
No, not at the moment. And I think in recent years, the annual budget just hasn't had the impact it has had in the past. And that's partly because a lot of the information is out there previously, and partly because there's not things like big moves in income tax rates, the kind of thing that really makes a big difference to people's take-home pay. We know that we're expecting changes to the indexation for the bands. That will make a difference for people, but it's just not going to be enormous. So it's up to the government to, I think, keep selling this message that they've been pushing, that they are going to address the cost of living. I think you can guarantee that the opposition will say that they're not doing enough. But I think that's where the political arguments are going to be fought on the day.
And we like political arguments on this podcast.
Yes, keep it coming.
Keep it coming. Okay, we'll call it quits there. I'd like to thank Micheál Lehane, our political correspondent, Sandra Hurley, our political reporter, and David Murphy, our political assignments editor. That's all we have for you this particular week. Please do subscribe to the podcast. Please do leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. But until next week, take care.